Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Today's guest is someone who knows a lot about ingredients, a lot about flavor trends, and a lot about baked goods. He's Martino Bembilla, and he's the founder and president of Embassy Ingredients. Welcome to the show, Martino, and thank you very much for joining us.
So, thank you, Michael. Thanks for being glad to be on the show.
Yep. So tell everyone a little bit about Embassy Ingredients. What's your mission and what do you guys do?
So Embassy Ingredients is centered on the bakery trade. So we supply ingredients to large-scale bakeries. So we have a side of our business that makes flavors and a side that makes the industrial version, you might say, of a Duncan Hines cake mix. So when you go off to your supermarket or to Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, you'll find our ingredients in a lot of the baked goods that you're going to be buying at those QSRs or supermarkets.
Fantastic. I mean, like in Fork Tales, we talk about food and beverage, right? So restaurants, you know, CPG, all of the like. But what's really kind of cool about you and your business is you make the flavors. And the reasons we go to restaurants, the reason we buy CPG is because we like the way stuff tastes. We like the way they prepare their food. And you guys are kind of the secret ingredient, if you will, in behind it all. So my first question, I've known you for a long time, but I actually found this out and did not realize it. So I think this is fantastic and a great way to start. I love stories. I started my agency, my first advertising agency when I was 27. I thought that was really young. But you took over your father's company as owner and president when you were 17 years old. When I was 17, I was probably getting in trouble for speeding with my new driver's license. So, I mean, I can't imagine starting and running a company at that point in time. Can you tell us that story? How does someone start a company or take over a company at 17?
Well, it started actually 2 years before that. My dad pulled me out of school when I was in grade 11. So technically, I never graduated high school. And I started a company with my brother and I and my dad. So the three of us started up a business that was mostly distribution. My dad had a hobby of bringing in these flavors from Italy, diluting them with simple syrup, which is water and sugar. And we used to sell them to bakeries up and down the street, all these small Italian bakeries that were all over Toronto. Because Toronto has a large Italian community. 2 years later, my brother went off and started directing television commercials. He's in video art now. He's done pretty well, though. He did the graphics for the Sphere for the U2 concert.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And my dad and I didn't really see eye to eye on how to run a business because he wanted to have a business with no employees and the business was going bankrupt. So my dad left and I took over a $5,000 a year business. So that was our total sales, I remember at that point. And I had a J2000 wagon to do my deliveries in. So there wasn't a lot of speeding going on in that J2000 wagon. I think if I floored that sucker, it wasn't going over 60. Okay, so that's how the business started. I was the only employee. Basically got the orders in the morning, made them in the afternoon, delivered them again the next day, and got more orders. I slowly grew the business, started making our own flavors, started getting into bakery mixes. We bought used equipment from a company that went bankrupt. And we started blending our own cake mixes for these bakeries. And then as we grew, we started getting into more industrial customers. And then our business model kind of evolved into dealing with the larger and larger bakeries and the big product launches. So, and where I really learned how to run a business is that as a 17-year-old kid, I found that persistence and perseverance really are what is the personality trait you need as an entrepreneur. Like, amen. Without that, you're not going to make it. But then I went back to school in my 40s. I went to a class called OPM at Harvard. And it's 9 weeks of schooling at Harvard. It's 3 weeks every year over 3 years. That's when I joined YPO because about 20% of my classmates were YPOers at an organization that we both belonged to. learn how to develop a business model, learn how to really run a company rather than just having a job as in grunt work and building a business that way, and really expanded the business after that. And that's when we really broke into, you might say we deal with all the largest bakeries in North America right now. So our products are going to be in your baked goods whenever you want to indulge. It's probably something of mine is in something you're eating during the week.
Yeah, I heard you say it before, and that's amazing. Like, there's probably everybody in the country, U.S., Canada, and I think South America. You said too, they taste your products. You're in their bread or their cupcake or their muffin somewhere, right?
Yeah, and we're also in some global launches with some retailers. So we produce the product mostly in North America. Sometimes we export it internationally. So there's some of our products that are going all over the globe in global launches.
That's great. You know, I think it's really interesting you brought up about, I'll say either YPO or I'll just say entrepreneurs as a whole. The folks I talk to on this program are all like presidents or CEOs of companies. A lot of them are entrepreneurs. Everyone seems to have, by and large, the same story. I think a lot of people just think, oh, you know, you're highly educated. You came from money. You're handed this opportunity. And that's quite the opposite. Like, pretty much everybody has that same thing in common, that they grind it out. They started at the bottom. They had an idea. They didn't have any money. They just pushed. And I think that is the secret sauce in absolutely every one of these great stories I get to hear. You know, everybody just kind of pushes and pushes and pushes and doesn't give up. I mean, I'm sure you faced a lot of adversity. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you bumped up against?
Well, you know what? I had zero money when I took it over. And at 17, you can't even legally get a loan from the bank. Because I wasn't 18 yet. So my only line of credit was a credit card that the bank manager was able to give me. I had no help from anybody, including my family. Actually, one thing that drove me a lot in terms of adversity was my dad's parting words when he left was, I'll be bankrupt in 6 months. So the thing is, if I don't think he meant it that way, but that inspired me to never mm-hmm. throw in the towel. and that's part of my personality is, I will never give up. I just before this podcast, I just got off a call with one of our largest customers, and we're trying to work on a big new program with them. And at the end of the phone call, I told them, well, one thing you'll notice about Embassy, we're very persistent. And he just started laughing. And he goes, yes, I've noticed that.
That's fantastic. Hey, you got to be a bulldog.
Yeah. To this day, if there's one trait that will make an entrepreneur successful or any business leader successful, is persistence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We call it being bulldogged here. I mean, we all, that's our mascot and it's sort of our attitude. You got to just be, you know, you got to be bulldogged about stuff. Just don't give up and keep pushing forward. So that's awesome advice. All right. So let's jump into the business thing here. Let's talk about the clean labels. In the 80s and 90s, people didn't care about additives, preservatives, artificial colors, as long as the finished products tasted good. And that's no longer the case, right? So how much of a challenge has that been to keep up with the demand for cleaner ingredients?
Well, let me give you an example on the flavor side. Back in the 90s, I'd say 80% of all the flavors we sold were artificial and 20% were natural. I think right now it's about 80% natural, 20% artificial. And that also has gone to the color side. There's a challenge there. There's a cost increase in some cases, but not always. But at this point here, after doing it for so many years, it's quite simple to switch a product from being an artificially flavored and colored product to at least the natural flavors. The colors are more of a challenge, but that also could be done now. But that's the most costly part is the color side. Mm-hmm. In terms of clean label, in terms of what you're eating, we actually have fun in that. Like we've always tried to keep the junk out of our mixes. Only because you're buying something that you want to indulge in doesn't mean it has to be completely unhealthy for you. And we've always thought about if it's not needed inside the product, why put it in? So we've always looked at keeping a shorter ingredient deck, keeping it natural. And even there, we've done a lot of very all natural products that we launched over the last few years.
So you can't have indulgence in clean labels, right? I mean, even though we're talking cakes and cookies, people, you know, they want to watch what they eat, but they can still have clean labels, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually some of my favorite products that you find on the store shelf that are indulgent and taste great are clean label. So in the 70s, the technology wasn't there to make them clean label and give the conditions that you need in the supermarket. For example, if you produce a baked good today, you have to make it, freeze it, and then it has to go to the supermarket. And then the supermarket typically wants to thaw out the product and have it on the shelf for up to 8 days so that customers can buy it, bring it home, and it still tastes good. In the 70s, the technology wasn't there to do that naturally. The technology is there now that using natural ingredients, you can achieve that. Mm-hmm. And you can actually make it taste better than using artificial ingredients.
Very cool. So, I mean, talking about trends, you and I met probably years and years ago when I would do the food and beverage trends presentation at YPO. And for anybody that's listening that would care, if they go to cheers@quenchagency.com, they can download our food and beverage trends presentation. It's free. We have several years. We always have the most updated on the website. So that's always there. So that's how you and I met. But the thing that we had in common right away was talking about trends. And I know that you follow them very closely. The way we always looked at it, there's innovators who are really super early on a trend. Then there's early adopters, early majority, and then late majority. And then obviously laggards. We're always obviously trying to be in the forefront. When I do a trends presentation, it's like sometimes people are like, well, I've already heard of that. Well, if no one had heard of it before at all, it certainly wouldn't be a trend. So you want to catch that early edge of it, right? Talk about like how you look at trends, because you've told me before, a lot of times your flavor profiles and things like that, you're just listening, you're watching. And again, I think you've always said too, you want to be on the early side of it, because till you can get it to market, if you wait till the late majority, well, hell, it's too late. I mean, it's past its prime.
Hey, look, even inside the company here at Embassy, we have a lot of debates about trends and how do we do the market research. So our typical customer takes 12 to 18 months to launch a product from the time we present it, mm-hmm. or they request a presentation, which means that if you're trying to grab a trend that's already out there, they're going to be after the peak. So it's about looking at the trends that are up and coming. And that really makes us that the most successful products that we've launched have been with companies that haven't done focus groups, that haven't done the mental research in terms of these are the, because if you wait 18 months after that comes out, you're getting the tail end of the trend. That's you're right. Getting already where you're going to be losing money on it. The most successful launches we have is when you're scouring social media. You're looking at what's happening at the local small bakeries. When you're going to the trade shows and you're looking at the booths that couldn't afford the really good area in the middle, and they're right at the back corner, and these entrepreneurial companies that are really hungry have come up with this novel little product. Those are where you get the ideas for the really good trends. And then you have to sort out all these trends that you've seen and all these ideas these people are having, of which I'd say 80% will fail and not really become a mass market trend. And then hopefully pick the right one to say, this one's got legs. Let's really present it to our customers. And when we have customers that don't want to go to the focus groups, because a lot of those trends will fail in the focus group because you're showing the customer something they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when people are willing to take a chance and say, this is up and coming, we've seen great results coming out the other end.
Very cool. So how do you balance that? How do you balance between a trending exotic flavor and say something that's familiar, like comfort food? So, I mean, at the end of the day, sometimes you just want a really good chocolate chip cookie or a blueberry muffin. How does that work? Like how do you decide how much of these exotics or how much of a flyer do you take on some of these new flavors?
Yeah, it's like the basics are easy to sell and they're always going to be a mass market item and they're going to get great sales out of them and you could tweak those a little bit. So sometimes if you don't want to take too much risk, you can do a tweak on a basic and then you can get on a new trend with a tweak on a basic. Or you can try experimenting with LTOs. So a lot of our customers will try with LTOs. Like, so it reduces the risk factor, and they can see if it's something that can go mainstream and they can make it go all year round, and they come in with a 3-month LTO project. But it's really listening to the noise in the media and going around to different parts of the world and seeing what's trending there. Because the US is going to get the trends usually after Europe and after Asia gets them, if, depending on the community you're trying to target. And it's really listening what's coming out of there and trying to grab onto it at the right point.
Very cool. So if you can tell me, what are some of the trends you're tracking now, like in terms of ingredients and maybe recipe development? Is there anything that's that you're looking at that you think is pretty cool, exciting, and new?
Well, the stuff that's coming out sometimes is not as exciting as new as I would like it to be. But,
but it sells.
and you know what? Every year we publish a little thing that we send out to everybody, like at the end of 2023, what are the trends for 2024? And it sounds like, oh my God, Embassy's got a crystal ball. Well, the reality is, since our customers are always launching 12 to 18 months out, we already know what's trending for 2024 because it's already in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So what's really trending for next year is a lot of basics. It seems like coming out of COVID, everybody wants comfort foods. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to get into what their grandmother used to make, into that comfort and so on. There's a lot of indulgence where they want it a lot richer too, though. So they want something with a lot of richness. So if people trending wise are trying to get healthier in general, like there's a push right now where people are drinking a little bit less alcohol. People are trying to get a little bit healthier, but people still want to indulge. So when before a lot of customers would want, okay, how inexpensive can we make this? There's a little bit more of a push for quality. So with the clean label push, it's also coming to push where if I'm going to consume 800 calories, I want it to be worth the 1 hour on the treadmill I'm going to have to pay for this. And it's going to taste really good. And there's nothing wrong with indulging once in a while. No matter what diet you're on, you need to indulge. Also, there's nothing long-term going to happen. But when you indulge, it better be good. You don't want to have something that had 3 cost-cutting projects done before it, and it's being made as inexpensively as possible. So people are trending more. They'll spend a little bit more money, but buy a smaller portion. And that's one trend that I really am supporting, because everybody would rather sell quality than something that doesn't have that quality behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Absolutely. So, I mean, you started your business, you're 17. You've obviously seen a lot of challenges, 2008, COVID, and I'm sure there's a million in between. Like, what are some of the biggest challenges you've gone through? I know you've said that the COVID pandemic is your biggest professional accomplishment. Were there others before that? Do you want to talk a little bit about that and go into the whole COVID thing, what you did there?
Oh, well, I guess the last time before COVID that it was a great learning process. Every crisis, trust me, you learn some new business skills you never thought you had, was 2008 financial crisis. Like for about 3 months, our sales went down 50% because none of our customers knew what to buy or if to buy anything and so on. And it ended up just being a depletion of supply chain, because what we found out that during a crisis, people actually eat more sweets than in a non-crisis.
That's right.
So business rebounded very fast after that. During COVID, the biggest issue was supply chain. Okay, that's probably with everybody else. It was a matter of how do we keep our customers supplied and how do we keep their operations going and how do we continue supplying their customers and how do we get the food on the table for the people that need it. So that's where the challenges were. So it was a lot of prioritizing, reformulating, sometimes to use less of an ingredient that we used to use inside of a product. We try to see, okay, can we substitute it with other ingredients and bypass the shortage of this one ingredient? So there was a lot of R&D work being done on that. A lot of tough decisions. Like we had to abandon some of our export markets We decided to focus in on our Canadian and US and Mexican customers and abandon some of the other markets a little bit more than we were aggressively pursuing before. We stepped back until supply chain caught up, and now we're re-engaging again.
Did you feel like the supply chains are catching up? You feel like that's getting better?
Supply chains are catching up in most parts. What's happening now to us is global warming. So supply chain seems to be catching up, and then you get an email that there's a drought in Africa, so in the Ivory Coast, so now you can't get cocoa. Everybody's going to be seeing if there's anything chocolate on the shelf, that's going to probably go up 30 to 50% in price.
Wow.
And in some cases, you won't even be able to find it. So the world cocoa and chocolate supply just went down 30% because of one drought. So we're finding a lot of the challenges that we're having right now is all due to global warming and the crisis happening in certain parts of the world, and then mitigating the supply challenge of that ingredient that got affected.
Incredible. During COVID, I mean, there was the shutdown. At-home baking was a big trend. Certainly, that's not bad for you, but certainly you probably do even better with the store-bought baked goods and things like that. Is that correct?
Well, at-home baking was terrible for us. We don't have anything that is for the at-home baker. We only supply the large bakeries that will supply all your QSRs and your supermarkets.
So you're not in any mixes. You're just in the finished product. Got it.
Yeah, we're in the finished product. So COVID, even the work from home was not good for us because a lot of the sales, like you can use, let's say Dunkin' as an example, like a lot of people will get a coffee on their way to the office. And then when they get their coffee, they'll also get a muffin or they'll get a bagel. But if you're not going to the office, you might not leave your house to get the coffee. And if you're not getting the coffee, you're also not getting the muffin or bagel or donut. So the work from home also affected the business and where the customers shop, because it went into the supermarket rather than the QSRs. So it's a matter of finding out where the new outlet is.
Yeah, the work from home thing is still affecting everybody. I know that it's just a whole different animal, and there's a lot of real estate out there that's sitting empty, and it's just it's changed how we are. It's interesting to see how this all evolves. I want to go back to another question. So on your website, it says here, if you're an employee of Embassy, you get bakery treats galore. All right. So that is a perk, right? So if someone's starting there tomorrow, what would they find? Are there bakery treats galore waiting for them?
Oh, absolutely. How we work our quality department is that every time we make a batch of anything, we test the batch and we actually make the finished cake. So we have an endless amount of baked goods coming out of our bakery, testing the products that we made, that is free to take for any of their employees to take home with them, take it home to their family, and so on. And then depending on your job function, but any employee gets invited to this, we're always developing new products in R&D. And we're always looking for people to taste the products and give us feedback. So in some job functions, you have to be eating sweets every day. So for some people it's a dream job. So you get really good at tasting and not eating. Okay. So because first you join Embassy, then you get what I call the Embassy 15. Then you realize that, okay, I only had to take a bite out of that muffin. I didn't have to eat the whole muffin to taste it. So then you go back to just a bite and you get back to regular. But then sometimes you get these really great, like we just finished a project that just got approved last week. It's going to be a national launch later on this year in the US. And it hit the sweet spot for exactly what I like. I mean, it was right down the bullseye for stuff that I have a weakness for. It is the first time in a year that not only did I not taste, I was actually actively asking R&D, can you tell me when it comes out of the oven and make an extra one for me?
So now you're going to put on the 15, is that right?
Oh yeah, I put on the 15. But you know what? When it's that good,
yeah,
the 15 is well worth it. You know, like I said, It's worth every calorie at one point.
Never trust a skinny baker, right? Isn't that what they say?
Absolutely. Like one baker one time was patting his belly and said, "This is my R&D department."
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. All right, so I'm going to test you with some rapid fire questions here on your baked goods. I want to know your personal favorites. Okay, so pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
All right, I would agree with that. Sponge cake or angel food cake?
Okay, when I was 10 years old, it would be angel food cake. Now I'll say sponge cake.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Multigrain bread or white bread?
Multigrain.
Yep, same here. Donuts or Danish?
Oh, a nice yeast raised donut. Oh, it's so good.
Mm-hmm. Man, we're exactly in the same line here. Cookies or brownies?
Brownies. Oh. And there's also two camps in brownies. There's the cakey brownie people, mm-hmm. and there's the chewy brownie people. Mm-hmm. And the world is split 50-50. And I'm a chewy brownie person.
that's great. That's great. Yeah, I prefer the chewy brownie myself. I totally agree with that. And, you know, it's funny you had said earlier, too, about how, you know, when there's issues with the economy, sweets go up. You know, we worked in the ice cream category for many, many years, and that was absolutely the case. You know, you worry about like, oh, discretionary spending is going to go down. People aren't going to spend money on grocery. They're going to cut back just to the necessities. Ice cream is definitely a necessity. Any sweet is a necessity when the economy is in trouble. So that's something we learned a long time ago. I got one last question. I'm throwing a curveball here. Now, being an Italian guy, this is intriguing to me. There's obviously dough, which is, you know, in your breads and everything. And I'm Italian. I love bread. And then there's batter, right, in your pastries. Batter or dough? If you had to pick one or the other, you can't have anything ever again.
Oh, I'll go for the batter.
Okay. All right. I'd probably go dough. That's probably where we'd split.
No, I got a sweet tooth. I got a sweet tooth.
Well, but basically you should. Yeah, you basically should. So, okay, a couple last questions here. I know you have a really busy, you said you're on the road for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, busy trade shows. What trade shows do you go to? Like what's, you know, and where do you find that you're observing some of the cutting edge flavors and food trends? Are they international shows? Are they more national? Or, I mean, where are you going and what are you seeing and why?
Well, it's a combination of international and national shows. Like in the U.S., you got the Fancy Food Show. Mm-hmm. You have two of them that are happening in the States. And again, where we find value is all the middle of the show. You've already seen all that stuff. Yeah. Like you've seen it on your website. You've seen it on every website you want to look at. Those are stuff, that stuff that's been in the stores already, mm-hmm. or is about to be launched. We've already heard of it. I like the back corners and that new company booth area where all these new entrepreneurs are exhibiting. There's CL, which you're looking at finished products, and that's a more international show. There's Anuga in Germany. So we go to a lot of the international ones too, because that gives us trends that are happening over there that might be mainstream, but they haven't come to the US or Canada yet. So that gives us maybe an outlook going, okay, which one is transportable and which one is not. Then our industry show, there's like IDDBA, that's a bakery show just for our industry. There's IBIE in Vegas that happens every 3 years. And there's some industry shows that are just for bakery that are happening in Germany and France.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. My last question for you, Martino. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why? And it can't be one of your products.
Well, it has to be one of my products.
No, it can't be one of your products.
Well, it can't be one of my products.
No. Get off the grid
I'm
here.
I'm Italian. I know. So I'd like every nationality of food. I'll try anything and I eat everything. But at the end of the day, I'm Italian. It's got to be Italian food.
There you go.
And it could be anything from a great plate of pasta to steak tartare, the Italian style, not the French style. There's two different styles. I'm on the Italian side, of course. And then also like fish crudo, like it's thinly sliced raw fish. It's mm-hmm. like the Italian version of the sushi.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's fantastic. Well done. Is there a special restaurant, something in Toronto? Is there a go-to for you?
Well, my favorite high-end restaurant in Toronto that does Italian food is a place called Danico. They have amazing high-end Italian food. But if you're looking for like basic pastas and everything else, there's a Amano Pasta that's it's actually, they have a location in the train station, but they have wow. great pastas.
Yeah.
And you get them dirt cheap and they're really good. Toronto's got 500,000 Italians. So it's hard to select one restaurant. And I go to a lot of different restaurants, and with that many Italians, food's the culture.
That's it. That's right. Amen. That's perfect. Martino, you were wonderful. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And I always enjoy when we get to hang out. So hopefully I'll get to see you soon. And I appreciate you being a part of this.
Thank you. Bye, Michael.
All right, buddy. Talk soon.